Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, stop striving and let God fight for you. This is 1 Samuel 26. So, are you a fight or flight person? Whenever you are confronted, do you stand there and fight, or do you try to find a way out of it? I don't consider myself a person that is looking for a fight. As a matter of fact, it completely exhausts me to have any sort of confrontation. And so that's not what I want. But I would say that when presented with the choice of fight or flight, I'm going to fight every single time. It's just in my nature. And you know, a lot of people might say, good for you. That's admirable. And then other people who are, you know, don't have that tendency might be like, no, it's better to walk away. You don't want to start any problems. But those of us who, you know, are just have that tendency in us to fight, it seems almost weak or something to, you know, to run away. You're like, I'm not running away. What are you talking about? That's not okay. But in our story today, we're going to see that David is fleeing from Saul, and that this is admirable, that he is not weak for running away or trying to keep the peace. As a matter of fact, he is relying on God's power instead of his own. He's letting God fight for him instead of fighting for himself. And when I read this story and I saw it in that way, I'm like, oh, that is a better way. It's better to let God fight for you than it is to fight for yourself. And so last week we talked about how David had encountered this man named Nabal, and he wanted to fight him, but his wife deterred him. And then God took care of Nabal himself. And then David married Abigail once her husband had passed away. But now David is still on the run from Saul. And so in chapter 26, it tells us that David has left that area of Maon and he's gone back to the hill of Hakilah, which is the same place that he went when he got finished saving the city of Keilah. And so this is the area where the Ziphites live. And just as they did before, whenever he entered their territory, they went to Saul and said, hey, David is down here again, and we know where he is, and if you want to attack him, we can show you. And so even though David had saved Saul's life, and Saul told him that he was a better man than he was, and he was thankful to David, David knew that Saul had no intent of, you know, not trying to kill him. Even though he had had the opportunity to kill Saul and he didn't do it, he knew that Saul would keep pursuing him. And so David had men on the lookout. And so when they saw Saul coming with 3,000 men, they went and told David. And so David went down to Saul's camp and he saw that him and Abner, which was his commander of his army, they were both camping out with an entire army surrounding them. And so David went back to where he was, and he had two of his nephews with him, his sister's sons, and he also had a mercenary soldier with him who had come from the nation of the Hittites. And these were the people who ruled the area of the north, which was like Turkey area. And so he had these nephews with him and this soldier, and he went back and he said, hey, Saul is in the camp. Which one of you will go to the camp with me and find him? And his nephew, Abisha, said, I'll go with you. And so they both go down. They see Saul asleep in the midst of the camp with Abner, his commander, and the army surrounding him. And so Abisha says, look, God has given him into your hand. You should kill your enemy. He has his spear is stuck in the ground right beside his head. I could take that spear right now and drive it into his head, and that would be the end of him. Let me do that. And David's like, no, he says the same thing he said the first time. You know, God anointed Saul as the king, and I'm not going to be the one that kills him. But probably because of his experience with Nabal, seeing that God can kill his enemies anytime he wants to, he says, this isn't my job, this is God's job. And if God wants him dead, then God can kill him himself. And if God doesn't kill him, then he'll die in war or he'll die in natural causes. Eventually, he won't be around anymore, and then I'll take the throne. It's not going to be by my hands that he dies. I am entrusting him to God. And so instead of, you know, taking the spear and killing him, David says, I want you, though, to go down and take the spear and take that water jug that's beside him and then come back to me. And so after he takes the spear and the water jug, then they both go away. And it says that nobody saw them. No one even woke up because God had put them all into a deep sleep. And so David is cooperating with God's supernatural power to do God's will. And it makes you wonder how many times God has acted on our behalf when we don't even know it, because we're doing what he's wanting for us to do. And so he's helping David. And so David and his nephew go to a nearby mountain, and they yell to Saul and his army. And when Abner responds back to him, he says, who are you? And David's like, who are you? Aren't you the man that's supposed to be taking care of Saul? That's your whole job. And you failed at it, because I came into your camp last night and I could have killed him if not for the fact that I just had a good conscience and didn't want to do it. But it had nothing to do with you. You deserve to die for not protecting your king's life. You had one job and you failed at it. And if you don't believe me, check and see if his spear is still there, because I took the spear and the water jug that was sitting right beside his head. So this is proof that I could have killed him if I would have wanted to, but I didn't. No thanks to you. And then Saul recognizes David's voice and he calls out to him and he says, David, is that you, my son? And David says, yes, it's me. And then he continues to respond to Saul in verse 18, saying, why does my Lord pursue after his servant? For what have I done? What evil is in my hands? Now, therefore, let my Lord the king hear the words of his servant. If it is the Lord who has stirred you up against me, may he accept my offering. But if it is men, may they be cursed before the Lord. For they have driven me out this day that I should have no share in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go and serve other gods. And so what David is trying to say is that because Saul is pursuing him, David is not able to go to the tabernacle. And so if God thinks that David has done something wrong, then Saul should let him go to the tabernacle so that he can offer a sacrifice. But if this is just something that he and his men have cooked up against David, then they're doing double wrong, not just for trying to kill David, but also for driving him away from the land, not allowing him into the tabernacle to worship his God. And so he's saying, in essence, you're driving me away from my God and trying to force me to worship other gods, which I'm not going to do, but all of this is on you. And then in verse 20, he says to him the same thing that he says before. He says, why have you come to seek me out like a single flea, like someone who hunts a partridge in the mountains? And so remember, he said this to him before. He's like, I'm like a flea. Like, why are you pursuing one single insignificant man? You know, with an entire army. Why am I so important to you? I shouldn't be. You should not be wasting your time and effort and manpower on just one guy. I'm not a threat to you. And then he adds this part now, saying that you're seeking me like a partridge in the mountains. And the reason that he says this is because a partridge is a flight kind of bird. He does not stay and fight. And so David is saying, you keep pursuing me like a predator, trying to get me to fight, and I keep having to run away, trying to avoid this fight. But because partridges always flee, they're good at it. And so he's also telling Saul, I'm good at this by now, though, and so you're not going to catch me. And so you're wasting your time on one person that is not even important enough to waste your time on, and you're not going to catch me. And so then Saul responds to him in verse 21 by saying, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do you harm, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Behold, I've acted foolishly, and I've made a mistake. And so then David says, okay, well, then good. Glad for that. Here's your spear. Send somebody after it. And then David says, the Lord rewards every man for his righteousness and for his faithfulness. For the Lord gave you into my hand this day, but I wouldn't put my hand out against the Lord's anointed. Behold, as your life was precious this day in my sight, so may my life be precious in the sight of the Lord, and may he deliver me out of all tribulation. And so then Saul blessed David and said, bless you, my son David. You will do many things and you will succeed in them. And then they went their separate ways. So David is telling Saul, he's like, I trust God. I trust that God knows who is right and who is wrong, and that he's going to reward me for this, that he is going to protect my life because I protected your life, and that he is going to return to me the good that I've done to you. And so I'm letting you go. And then Saul says, I know that you're going to do great things. You'll be successful at everything you do, and I'm done. I'm not going to keep seeking after you. And so David is leaving everything in God's hands. He's trusting God's timing and God's way, and he's walking away. And so David's focus was on doing what was right, and he was leaving the rest to God. He said, I'm not going to defend myself. I'm going to let you defend me. And so what that looked like practically was he was evading. He was fleeing from Saul because he was trying to keep the peace and he was trying to keep himself from sinning. Not because he was afraid of Saul. That wasn't why he was fleeing from him. You know, that's kind of what we think is like, I don't want to look scared, and so I'm not running away. But that's not why David was running. He was running because he was trying to do the right thing and he wanted to have peace with Saul. And then when Saul did catch up with him, when he was basically cornered, then David was able to act from a position of strength because God had given him his strength. If you notice, David was in the power position. God gave him the ability because he had proven that he didn't want to fight and that he wasn't going to kill Saul. God gave David the power of the position of strength. God gave David the upper hand so David could make the choice. It wasn't that he was being forced. He wasn't running away because he was scared, and he wasn't being forced to, you know, back off and not fight. He was choosing not to fight. And so that made him strong. And so he was able to rely on the one who had power, and then he was in the power position, you see. And so that helped me because I feel like I'm being weak somehow if I turn away. But the person that makes the choice not to fight is the person that has all the power. Because I could fight, but I'm choosing not to. I'm choosing to relinquish my power to God. I'm choosing to cooperate with his power and let his power work through me. And when I looked at it that way, I was like, much easier. Now I can save face, right? Now I'm not acting from a position of weakness. When I realized that David wasn't weak at all, he is the one that has all of the power and he's making that choice, then I'm like, oh, I can do that. I don't have to always fight. Just because I run away doesn't mean that I'm scared, doesn't mean that I'm backing down. It means that I am not relinquishing my power to that person, but I'm relinquishing my power to God. And I'm letting Him do the fighting for me, and that I don't have to be so tired, right? Because it's absolutely exhausting to fight all of the time. And so that's good for me. I want that. I want to stop fighting, but I don't want to be scared, you know. I don't want to be running scared, and I don't want to be weak. And so I fight, but if I could realize that, no, I can relinquish my power to God and let Him fight for me, then I get some relief, right? And so I'm going to read you several verses that talk about this, you know, upside down idea, for us at least. And so the first one is Proverbs 29:23, and it says, "One's pride will bring him low, but he who is lowly in spirit will obtain honor." So it's good to be low, to bring yourself low. Not that other people are putting you down, but you're doing that for yourself. Zephaniah 2:3, "Seek the Lord, all you meek of the earth, who have upheld His justice. Seek righteousness, seek humility. It may be that you will be hidden in the day of the Lord's anger." Humble, meek. These things are not things that we like to be, but God says they are what He wants us to be. Micah 6:8, "He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does God require of you, but to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God." Matthew 23:12, "Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." God will lift us up. We don't have to do it ourselves. And then in Matthew 5:1-11, this is the Beatitudes, whenever God says, "Blessed are those." And so in verse 3, He says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, because they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, because they will inherit the earth." The meek are the ones that don't fight for the earth themselves. And God says, "I'll give it to you. You don't have to fight for it." "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. I will fill them." "Blessed are the merciful. They will obtain mercy." That's what David was saying. He was like, "God will give to me what I give to you. If I give you mercy, God will give me mercy." "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." We are like our Father when we make peace, because God reconciled us to Him. God made a way for us to live peaceably with Him. So we should do the same thing for others. "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake." And so in Colossians 3:12-15, it tells us how we should be. It says, "As the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering. Bear with one another and forgive one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, you must forgive others. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection, and let the peace of God rule." It's in charge. Peace is in charge, not fighting. Notice all of those words: meekness, humility, long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiving one another. These are the things that we feel make us weak, but God says, no, that is you relinquishing your power to me, not to them. 2 Timothy 2:22-26 says, "Flee also youthful lust, pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, with all those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Avoid foolish and ignorant disputes, knowing that they will only generate strife. A servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all. Gentle to all. Able to teach, patient, in humility, correcting those who are in opposition, if God perhaps will grant them repentance, so that they may know the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive to him, by him to do his will. And so that one is telling us that we are to do these things so that maybe the other people will recognize the wrong that they've done and it will bring them to God. When they see us acting in good, even when they're being evil to us, then it might compel them to do the same. And you know, Saul did respect David, right? Because he did the right thing. And so instead of fighting for ourselves, we need to focus on doing what's right and let God take care of that. And so in Leviticus 19, 17 to 18, it says to us that we should not hate our brother in our heart, and we should not rebuke our neighbor or bear sin because of him. We should not take vengeance or bear any grudge against the children of our people, but we should love our neighbor as ourselves. We think a lot of times that the Old Testament tells us to, you know, take retaliation, and that the New Testament is what tells us to, you know, turn the other cheek. But that's not the case. This was in the Old Testament. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so Jesus explains this difference of where God tells them this in Leviticus, and then he also tells them in the laws, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And so Jesus explains that in Matthew 5, 38 to 48. He says, "You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone wants to sue and take away your tunic, give him your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks, and from him who wants to borrow from you, don't turn away. You have heard that it was said that you should love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those that curse you, and do good to those that hate you. Pray to those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, because he makes the sun rise on the just and the unjust, and he sends rain on the evil and the good." And so, yes, God says both of these things. God says, turn the other cheek. He says, do not get revenge. And he also says, a tooth for a tooth and an eye for an eye. And so what is the difference between those things? Whenever he is giving them the laws, that's when he tells them an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And he's doing that to the legislators and the judges. And he's saying, if you get two people that come to you and one of them has knocked the other one's tooth out, then it's only fair for that other person's tooth to get knocked out. What he's trying to do is show how to work their justice system. That's what he's trying to do. He's saying, if you are a judge and you are in charge of sentencing people, then do what is exactly fair. So you can't let the person who's done the wrong go, because that wouldn't be just. And you also can't let the person who has been wronged retaliate and do something worse. And so you as a judge need to make sure that the sentence is fair. But Jesus is talking to his disciples and he's saying, I don't want you to retaliate. As a matter of fact, I want you to let things go and let me take care of it. And so the way that I look at this is like, say that you're a teacher in a classroom. If you're a teacher in a classroom and you see one child hurt the other child, then you can't just let it go. You can't just be And you can't just go to the child that just got hurt and say, oh, let it go, turn the other cheek. That would be wrong. You are the judge in that case, and you are supposed to make sure that justice is done. And so you can't let the child that hurt the other child get away with it, but you also can't let the one who just got hurt retaliate. And so you have to set things right because you're the judge. But if you're the mom of that child and the child comes home and says, "Hey, this kid is hurting me," then you don't tell them to go and retaliate. You tell them to, leave it alone and let the teacher take care of it. And in the scenario here, we are the child and God is the teacher. God is telling us, "You let me take care of it." So when Jesus is saying, "Turn the other cheek," he's saying, "You don't retaliate, you let me deal with that. I will be the one who deals with the person that is doing wrong. I'll be the judge. I'll be the teacher or the judge or the sentencer, not you." And so God isn't contradicting himself when he's telling those things. He's actually telling that they need to have an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth because he doesn't want the people to retaliate because he's saying there will be an outside judge. And then Jesus is saying, "I'm that outside judge. You let me take care of it." And so he also talks about this same thing in Luke, but he tells it in a little different way. And so I want to read this too. This is Luke 6, 27 through 38. And he says, "I say to you, love your enemies and do good to those that hate you. Bless those that curse you and pray for those that spitefully use you. To him who strikes you on one cheek, offer him the other also. For him who takes away your cloak, don't withhold your tunic. Give to everybody that asks. From him who takes away your goods, do not ask for them back. Just as you want men to do to you, do to them likewise." That's where we get the golden rule, do unto others. And then it says in verse 32, "But if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners that love those that love them. And if you lend to only those who will pay you back, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to those that are going to give back to them. Love your enemies, do good, lend, and don't hope for anything in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be the sons of the Most High." So he's saying, let God reward you. You don't need people to pay you back here on this earth for the good that you do. "For he is kind to the unthankful and to the evil. Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Judge not, and you won't be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven." So all of the things that David was saying, if I do this to you, maybe God will do this for me. God says, "Yes, I will." "Give, and it will be given to you. With good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, it will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it'll be measured back to you." So not only will God give you what you give to others, but he will give you in the same measure, in the same scale. And so if we want others to be kind and forgiving and merciful and all of those things, then we need to do that to them. And then in Proverbs 25, 21 and 22, it says, "If your enemy is hungry, give him food. And if he is thirsty, give him something to drink. And you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you." So maybe he'll feel bad about what he did, and then you will be rewarded either way. And so God has all of the power. It's not in our power. It's not our right to deal with other people. So we need to give it all to him. Stop fighting and let God fight for you. In Deuteronomy 32, 39 to 43, it says, "Now see that I, even I, am he, and there is no God besides me. I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. There is no one that can deliver them from my hand." So God's like, these things are up to me. "For I raise my hand to heaven and I say, as I live forever, if I whet my glittering sword and my hand takes hold on judgment, I will render vengeance to my enemies and I will repay those that hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood, and my sword shall devour flesh, with the blood of the slain and the captives from the heads of the leaders of the enemy. Rejoice, O Gentiles, for God will avenge the blood of the servants and render vengeance to his adversaries. He will provide atonement for his land and for his people. God gets vengeance, not us. Proverbs 2:8 says that God guards the paths of justice and preserves the way of his saints. So he will make a way for us to do what is right if we will just follow him. And then the last verse, Proverbs 11:18 to 21 says, the wicked man does deceptive work, but he who sows righteousness will have a sure reward. As righteousness leads to life, so he who pursues evil pursues his own death. Those of a perverse heart are an abomination to the Lord, but the blameless in their ways are his delight. Though they join forces, the wicked won't go unpunished, but the posterity of the righteous will be delivered. So the difference in how God treats the good and the evil, those that are following him and those that are doing whatever they want. So I hope that this has inspired you, if you are a fighting kind of person like me, to let God do the fighting for you. It's too much work to fight all the time, right? And God is a much better fighter than us anyway. He's the one that has all the power, so we should just give it to him. We're not weak by choosing not to fight. That doesn't mean we're scared. It doesn't mean we're weak. It means we are trying to do the right thing, and we're turning over our power to the one who has all the power, who deserves to have all the power, and we're taking a break from all the fighting. So that's all I have for you today. If you would like this lesson in written form, I do have a ton of Psalms in this lesson that you can look at, and they're there to just click on if you subscribe at livethroughjesus.substack.com. If you don't want to become a paid subscriber, then you can become a free subscriber and you won't get this lesson. You only get that if you're a paid subscriber. But if you are a free subscriber, then you'll get the blog posts that go along with this lesson. And with your subscription, you get access to either all of the free blog posts if you're a free subscriber, or you get access to all of the lessons if you are a paid subscriber. And so it's only $6 a month or $60 a year. And then you can do all of the lessons that we've already done, beginning in Deuteronomy. And that enables you to get all of this that I taught here, but also to, you know, do a little bit of a deeper study. You can click on all of these verses that I have, and I do have more verses in the lesson that you can click on and read. And then also, if you want to do it with a Bible study group, then it's a cheap way because you can just get one subscription instead of a whole bunch of books. So make sure that you subscribe to that, and also subscribe to my Live Through Jesus weekly devotions channel, where I teach all of the blog posts. That's a separate YouTube and podcast channel with lots shorter lessons on there. And then also follow me on social media at Live Through Jesus. So make sure you subscribe at one of those places, and I'll just see you back next week. Thanks, and have a good day. Mm-hmm.